My guest at this time is Ken Buck. He's a Republican congressman from Colorado's 4th Congressional District, and he's also the author of the brand new book, Drain the Swamp, How Washington Corruption is Worse Than You Think. And in this book, Congressman Buck does not pull many punches, if at all. He names names and talks about why the frustration that many of us, millions of Americans, have with Washington is so entrenched and what it's going to take to reverse it. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You were elected to the House of Representatives in 2014, so you've been there a little over 2 years now. And obviously, many of our listeners will remember that you ran for the Senate and nearly won that seat against Senator Bennett back in 2010. So you've studied the issue for a long time, and you knew Washington had big problems before you got here. So what surprised you most? Was it the general complacency with how things are? Was it how Republicans ran things? What struck you most when you first came to Washington?
I'll tell you, I think that most of us that have not served in Congress or the Senate have an understanding of a general understanding of how things don't work and how there must be corruption. What surprised me was learning the specifics of the corruption, learning the details and how the establishment, how leadership uses certain influences to try to create discipline and order to a certain extent, but also make sure that the special interest groups are taken care of.
And let's talk about each of those briefly. You spend quite a bit of time in the book talking about the main things that the leadership seems to want is your money. In other words, fundraising to help the National Republican Congressional Committee. Most of that money not going to the members who raised it because it's earmarked for, you know, the most competitive races, and most districts aren't that competitive. And the other thing, of course, is voting the way leadership wants you to do. So talk about that and what the punishments are for those who don't do those things.
We have dues, and so if you're on an A committee, your dues are higher than if you're on a B committee, and higher. I mean, $450,000 this year for being on an A committee, and those dues go to the National Republican Congressional Committee to be used to maintain the majority, but they are raised by approaching special interest groups and asking for money, and the challenge is that those groups expect something in return, and so there is a quid pro quo. There is a system in place that you are required to pay dues and you're required to raise money, and part of that is going to be being influenced by people that you may not agree with.
And let's talk about the special interest money. Obviously, they want support for their agenda, but how much more sinister does it get than that?
Well, you know, their agenda is resulting in $20 trillion of debt, $100 trillion of unfunded liabilities. It's pretty sinister when you look at it that way. Certainly, they have you know, business interests that they are representing, but the long term effect is that members of Congress are reluctant to take tough votes, and they are not reluctant to add more debt to our national balance sheet.
We're talking with Colorado Congressman Ken Buck. The book is Drain the Swamp. And in this book, Congressman, you talk about several different examples just in your few months in Congress when John Boehner was still the speaker, in different ways that his activities made you recoil, from arm twisting on the House floor to trying to eventually whip Democratic votes to get certain bills passed, to using conservatives to support larger ideas when it comes to reauthorizing No Child Left Behind, for example, and then ultimately cutting out the legs from Republicans and conservatives when it comes to putting in more power for the states on an issue like that. Ultimately, of course, he had to resign. What was it that ultimately got to him? Because obviously he was Republican leader for nearly a decade. How ultimately did that not work in his favor and he had to resign?
Well, it's one thing being a Republican leader when you're in the minority. You are opposing Nancy Pelosi. You are opposing Barack Obama. And it is much easier to lead a minority, much more unified in their opposition. When he started leading the majority, that's when he really had difficulty, because he had to bring people together and try to accomplish something positive. And he often used tactics from a bygone era at least I hope it's a bygone era, because they aren't the same tactics that Paul Ryan uses. And the result is that it caused consternation among Republicans, and he lost popularity.
You seem to think much more highly in this book of Paul Ryan than you do of Boehner, and you just mentioned it there. How has Ryan been substantially different?
Paul Ryan is a policy wonk. He is a very bright individual. He could talk policy with anybody, and really does his best to convince people through good policy rather than through threats, intimidation, any kind of benefits. The policy and the politics are much more separated with Paul Ryan than they were with John Boehner. And again, the jury is out on whether that's going to be successful or not. I happen to think it will be, but we'll see soon with the healthcare initiative and other initiatives like tax reform and immigration, whether Paul is going to be able to bring a coalition together to get that job done.
Well, let's talk about a couple things that are in the headlines right now. We know that the American Health Care Act was pulled, at least temporarily, since it didn't have enough support to pass. What was the whipping like in that situation? How much pressure was on you, and how did it compare and contrast to the way Boehner would have done it?
Well, I'll tell you, I was I am in the Freedom Caucus, and I received one short question from the whips team. I was never contacted by the speaker, majority leader, or whip, president, or vice president about my vote. I got the opportunity to go to meetings. I got the opportunity to learn. And I really felt absolutely no pressure and really just the opportunity to try to do the right thing.
And now, of course, we also have a debt ceiling coming up at the end of the month. What's the lobbying been like on that, and how are you approaching it?
I have not heard anything so far about that. I'm sure when we get back to Washington, D.C., in 10, 12 days, we will start working on that, and they will start whipping that. But I have not heard what the proposals are, and I have no basis to form a judgment at this point.
When we talk about naming names in the book, obviously that's not going to sit well. What kind of reaction have you gotten so far?
You know, so far, I haven't gotten a reaction. I'm in New York City doing a lot of different interviews here, and Congress is out and all over the country. And so I have not heard from anybody at this point, whether they appreciate my efforts to reform Congress or not.
You say one of the biggest issues for why Washington doesn't change, or at least not for the better, is due to character, that despite the way people campaign, when they come to Washington, they really don't want to have to take tough votes, and they end up pretty much okay with the status quo, even though we're $20 trillion in debt. So is it just a matter of it being too tough to fight against your own party's leadership and just the way that the process already works, or is there more to it?
Well, I think that, you know, our founding fathers created a system of government that really depends on a moral people and principled elected officials. And a lot of the principles, a lot of the individuals coming to D.C. are very well-meaning and principled when they get to D.C. I think there is a corrupting influence in the swamp. And I think ultimately many people, most people, who are members of Congress start to compromise their values and start to figure out how they can get reelected and avoid taking tough votes. And that's really the central issue in what is corrupting in the system.
How do we get anything done there? I'm thinking of two specific examples in this book. One is when you first got to Washington and you were speaking to the chairman of the House Budget Committee, who is now the Secretary for Health and Human Services, and he asked you if you would be willing to support the Republican budget if you were to be on the committee. And your response was, well, what if I don't like it? And that pretty much ended that conversation. I also think of the story of former Wyoming Congresswoman Cynthia Lummis, who was forced to vote for a bill she hadn't seen and then was not allowed to read it afterwards. So how do we get to this point? How do we get out of this point?
Well, I think we get out of this point with good principled people. I think we get out of this with Americans reading this book, understanding what is going on in D.C. in some detail, and exercising and exerting influence from the outside to make sure that we reform. We need a balanced budget amendment. We need term limits. We need to make sure that we have a report on a alleged pay-fors, the way that we fund different programs. We need to make sure that the pay-to-play system is ruled unethical by the ethics committee and that it stops. So I think there's a lot of reforms that we can enact inside Congress. I think we need to also work from the outside to pass important measures like a balanced budget amendment.
You talk a lot in the book about America's fiscal health or lack thereof, and there's a couple of different issues I just want to get out there to the American people. We certainly encourage them to pick up a copy of the book. One is the pressure within the party to essentially vote for whatever the leadership wants. And specifically, I'm thinking of the chairman's marks. When the chairman of the Appropriations Committee wants something, he sends it down to the relevant subcommittee. And then the expectation is that members of his party will go along with that. And it's not just on these sorts of issues, but others. Anyone who votes against that is effectively shamed and berated. What's been your experience in that area?
Well, my experience comes secondhand in the appropriations process from friends like Cynthia Lummis who have experienced just what you described. And there has to be some discipline in the committee structure. But the idea that staff is handing you a document and it's a document that staff has largely created and is demanding that elected members vote that way is just not how the system should work, and it really cuts out the American people and their elected representatives. And so it's wrong, and it needs to change. And I think that especially on the important A committees like Appropriations and Ways and Means and Energy and Commerce, the members have to roll up their sleeves and have to get involved and understand the ramifications of the specific legislation that they're passing.
Another issue is omnibus spending, which means that they don't come through the specific appropriations bills, but it's all lumped together to avoid government shutdowns. How much has that not only added to our debt, but also a lack of accountability?
I think it's a great example. When we don't go through regular order and pass 12 appropriations bills that are discussed on the floor and open for amendment, we end up with a last-minute sort of crisis management situation where we're told that we have to keep government open. And a lot of things are put into that. Spending programs are put into the omnibus bill that members don't know about because we have very little time to review that bill. And it does cost taxpayers more money to go through the process and avoid the appropriations process. And it does take away from members' input and accountability. And usually those omnibus bills are passed after an election and before the next Congress convenes. And so it is just very convenient for leadership to operate in that way.
Last topic, and just to bring you what I would assume would be the rebuttal to some of what you said in this book from the leadership and so forth, that it's the job of leadership to try and build a consensus for legislation that advances their agenda either in a large way or at least in an incremental way, and that by putting together legislation that can get to a majority vote, it might not be everything that the conservatives or the Freedom Caucus want. And then their argument would be that the Freedom Caucus and members like you vote against something that's not perfect, and they're letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, you know, the health care bill is a perfect example. I ended up supporting it. 12 to 15 members of the Freedom Caucus were on board, and more moderate Republicans, liberal Republicans, were getting off that bill because the bill was getting more conservative. It was giving states more power and more discretion, and it's exactly what many of us have run on. And yet when it came time to govern, people started running away from that because they might be held accountable by their voters. So I think that, there is a practicality. It's just how far are you willing to go to get the perfect bill? But I think we do have to be the governing party and we have to be responsible. And I certainly am doing my best to try to find a way to get to yes.
not only on that issue, but as we all know, there's tax reform potentially coming up here soon, as well as other key issues. You mentioned immigration earlier. Sir, more than anything else, what do you want people to take away from this book?
I'd like to make sure that people understand that D.C. is broken and that it is each American's responsibility to stand up and take action. And I hope it motivates people to be involved in the system.
Congressman, good luck with the book and best wishes for the rest of this session of Congress. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Colorado Republican Congressman Ken Buck represents his state's 4th congressional district. He is also the author of the brand new book, Drain the Swamp, How Washington Corruption is Worse Than You Think. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.